You're listening to the Igniting Souls podcast with Cary Overbrunner, devoted to helping you become a soul on fire.
Episode 36.
Hey everybody, I have a very special guest today. In fact, this is only the second guest I've ever had on my podcast. You know I like to speak most of the time, former pastor, this is the pulpit. But every once in a while, when I know that someone's doing an amazing thing, I like to bring them on. Last time we had Jonathan Milligan, and he told us incredible value. Many of you have responded and said that that was just really helpful for what you want to do with your work and your life, and I felt that this would be just as helpful, if not even more. Who knows? Might be Jeff versus John. We don't know. No, I'm kidding. But my guest today is Jeff Goins. A lot of you know about him. We've seen him blow up in a big way, in a good way, over the last few years. And I've subscribed to some of his stuff. I've done some of his work. It's helped me achieve more success and significance in my life. And I thought, hey, he's got something coming that's incredibly exciting. We're going to be talking about this today, the art of work. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Cary, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. I'm honored that you would let me be a guest on this fine show.
Well, Jeff, it seems like anytime something big is happening in this space, you're part of it. Is that true?
Well, I don't know. Often the way things seem aren't always the way they are, but if that's the perception, I won't fight it.
Yeah. And I love the way you introduce yourself a lot of times. I've heard everything from you look like a character from Harry Potter. Is that what I've heard?
Yes. You know, to be more specific, I look like a 14-year-old version of a character from Harry Potter, Ron Weasley, as that actor Rupert Grint, who's got red hair and, you know, something that resembles him. As he's gotten older, he actually, you know, looks older than me, and the reality is I'm 32 and he's, you know, 20 or something. But yeah, I resemble probably the 14-year-old Ron Weasley.
That's all right. I tell people I'm a bald guy with a girl's name, so we make a great rock band. There you go. Awesome.
There you go.
Well, Jeff, I'll tell you what, I have been exposed to this new book that you're writing. I think it's fantastic. I mean, it's laid out beautifully. It's a beautiful work of art. And, you know, ironically, your book's called The Art of Work. So I'm going to ask you a few questions. Is that cool?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. So, you know, we hear this thing calling. And many times it's a buzzword. Look, whether you're in churches, whether you're in corporate, it's a buzzword. And in this context for your book, what does calling mean?
I think calling means the reason that you were born. You know, it's the reason that you exist. I think that everybody has a purpose in their life, even when they don't realize it. And in the book, I argue that we can actually miss it or miss part of it. And a life lived well isn't just about, you know, taking whatever life throws at you. And at the same time, it's not about, you know, having some sort of expectation of what life is going to do for you. And then, you know, that being kind of delusional. It's really about taking our circumstances that often feel ordinary. I think a lot of people in life feel like they missed out on something. And I argue that a calling is really what happens when your plan goes wrong and you've got to make the most of, you know, what's left in life. It's not something special for elite people. It's something that is for everyone.
Yeah. Awesome. So I hear what you're saying is we all have a calling.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, I agree, and I think that's fantastic. So, look, finding out that calling is difficult. I think for a lot of people, it's a mystery. I think a lot of young people, or maybe people that reach some level of success in their corporate jobs. I know I work with a lot of clients, and they kind of say at around 40, 45, gee, I went through that first career. What do I want to be when I grow up? And they're almost, you know, transitions are huge. Don't you think today that a lot of people are almost at this midway point where they're asking this big question of what do I want to be when I grow up?
Yeah, I think so. And I love the way you kind of lay out that process in your book. You know, a lot of people feel imprisoned by a life that they didn't feel like they signed up for. I mean, you know, to go back to one of your favorite movies, Shawshank Redemption, you know, here's a guy who's wrongfully accused, right? Like, we all know, or at least we suspect in the movie and in the book, that he didn't do it. And yet, you know, after a while, he starts to sort of, it looks like he starts to become a part of the system. He starts to submit and succumb to the status quo. And, you know, and then, you know, the big twist at the end of the movie is you realize he never gave up hope of, you know, escaping. And I think that's true for a lot of us. Like, we feel stuck, not just in a job, but in a life that we didn't really sign up for, but at some point we feel like somebody signed us up for it, and we just feel obligated to go along, you know, with it. And I wrote this book because I wanted to speak to that desire that I just hear most people voicing, which is that I feel like I was made for more. And I was writing this from a place of, you know, I quit my more traditional job a few years ago working for a nonprofit, not because I hated it. I actually really liked my job. But I reached this point where I just had this suspicion, this nagging feeling that there was more I was supposed to be doing. And I felt really guilty about that, honestly. I felt like that was selfish of me. But when I finally embraced it and went for it, you know, this is a process that I kind of lay out in The Art of Work. When I did that, I realized that my calling, the work that I was born to do, was so much bigger than me. It was so much bigger than a job. And it was, you know, it was larger than I ever could have imagined. And I almost didn't take that step. I almost didn't do it because of this feeling of, you know, guilt of, how, you know, why can't I just be happy with, you know, the good job that I have? And I'm not saying everybody should quit their jobs. In fact, you know, that's a really hard road to walk. But I am saying that everybody is entitled, and, you know, that word can kind of have negative connotations, but also responsible for doing work that matters.
Wow. Wow. And that's so interesting, Jeff. I don't know if you've found this pattern, but when we're struggling, when we're in the tipping point, if you will, between, oh, should I go into this thing that I love, that I've always dreamed about, or should I stay with what I know? Don't you think that we can think that our decision in that moment is all about us?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the paradigm shifts for me in finding my calling was I started out thinking my dream was about me, and I didn't quite realize that I was, just, in a way, just a really small part of it. You know, the catalyst, the person that said yes, that led to an impact that's affected many, many other people. And it didn't really hit home to me until I was sitting in a leper camp in rural Kenya. This was about a year ago now, shaking hands with lepers, with victims of leprosy, shaking people's, you know, nubs and curled up feet. And I was in this camp with this nonprofit organization where we had taken a percentage of business revenue from this business that I started online a few years ago. And honestly, Carrie, I just did it. You know, I thought, you know, it's good to give, you know, percentage of your sales to a charity. Kind of makes you look good. It's the cool thing to do. I had mixed motives about it. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't coming from some great place of humanitarianism, if I'm being honest. And then when I'm sitting in the dirt, staring in the eyes of these people that, you know, we got to be a part of their story, I realized, wow, this was so much bigger than I ever could have imagined. And I've never forgotten the moment. I mean, basically, you know, I was selling this online course helping writers get their messages heard, and we were taking a percentage of that money and giving it to this nonprofit that built an income-generating workshop for women living in this leper camp so that they could make purses, go sell them in the market, and then make a living for you know, themselves and their families. And when I just kind of looked at it, you know, and I actually saw the whole thing, I was like, wow, like I thought I was just finding a way to make a living for myself and help some other people in the process. But, you know, just by having this business and, you know, structuring in a way where we were able to give away some of the money, it was impacting people's lives, you know, on the other side of the world in a way that just kind of self-perpetuating, like they're kind of, you know, building their own economy there. And, you know, I didn't feel like a hero. You know, I felt like, and I wasn't, you know, I was just, I felt honored to be a part of this story that, you know, is the introduction of the story and the first few steps of the process of, you know, finding my calling and trying to live out my dream. I felt like it was all about me. And at this point in the journey, I realized, wow, this has very little to do with me, except that I said yes, and amazing things happened as a result.
Totally. And that's, I think, the melody line that is super important, that the person who's listening to this podcast is saying, oh, you know, I know there's something more. I feel this. I'm sure Jeff's book could help me understand more. Yeah, if we think, oh, but I'm safe, but I'm comfortable, but everything's cool, I have my paycheck. I think what you're saying, Jeff, is that this is so much bigger than you. And look, I'm one of the people who's benefited from your choice to go after your calling. Thousands of people are. And if we can get outside of our own head and our own story, we'll realize that us saying yes is really saying yes to maybe something incredibly better that God has in store. Has that been your experience?
That has been my experience, Carrie. And, you know, what I would add to that is if you say no to this, you're not just saying no to yourself, you know, because I get it. A dream feels very personal. It's so much more than that. You're saying no to, you know, potentially hundreds or thousands or, you know, millions of people who, you know, need what you have to offer. And frankly, I don't think it has to be a lot of people. If, you know, if I am, you know, I'm in deathbed in a year or 50 years from now, and I look back at my life and remember that camp of lepers, and I got to be a part of that story, and, you know, some of the ones were there changing, you know, their lives, and we got to be a part of that, I can feel good about that. You know, I don't have to, you know, reach people and become a famous person. That was something that I never thought I would get to do and have done because I took a little bit of risks, stepped a little bit outside of my comfort zone. So, you know, my encouragement is to realize that a dream is just not about you. I think that God gives us dreams and callings, and we are caretakers, you know, stewards of those things. And what we do with those dreams doesn't just lead to, you know, our own personal success or failure. It has a much, you know, larger impact on other people's lives. And so if you say no to that thing, realize that you're not just saying no to yourself and your own dream. You're really saying no to changing other people's lives. And that should, you know, kind of weigh on you a little bit. It should be a little bit of a burden.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I like this theme that you talk about in your book. It comes up a few different places, but it's about listening to your life. And I think in this world of social media overload, you know, 5,000 ads coming across your awareness every day, according to Google, how can we listen to our life, and what does that exactly mean?
So listening to your life is this term that I came across in a book by a guy named Frederick Buechner. And he talks about it in a great little book called Now and Then. And Buechner, for those who aren't familiar with him, you know, basically was the guy who came up with this quote that your vocation is the place where your deepest joy meets the world's deepest need. And, you know, when you hear people talking about calling, you often hear that quote, and he was the one who came up with it. Anyway, he talks about making sense of your life by listening to it, that the way that you find your calling is really by paying attention to the things that you've done, the things that you've succeeded at, failed at, you know, passions, things that take away your energy, things that energize you. And Parker Palmer, an activist and another author, built on this idea in his book, Let Your Life Speak. And he said, before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, you know, and I think this is sort of the traditional way that we think about goal setting and life planning, like you got to tell your life what you want to do with it. Parker Palmer says that before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I need to listen to my life telling me who I am. And,
wow.
And I think that's powerful. I think that we have to know ourselves before we can know our calling. And that begins with this process of paying attention, listening to your life, really being honest about the things that you're good at and passionate about, and the things that have connected with the world's deep need, and the things that have not.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I've seen that in my work, that as we, first of all, I think God puts questions in our head and our heart, and you nailed it. I mean, we're talking about this, like, why question, why am I here? And maybe this where question, where should I invest my life? These things that I get every week, 40 hours. And you nailed it. It goes back first to your who. You know, who am I? And from that awareness of identity, these other pieces come into place. I love it. A couple more questions. You say something a little controversial. I love it. I just think it forces good thought. You say, failure leads us to success. And I think a lot of people listening will hear that and say, gee, that's encouraging because they've had some failure. What is it? What does that mean?
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm well acquainted with failure. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I thought for the longest time that failure disqualified me from success, that if I wanted to be successful, like, you know, the gurus who write books and, you know, speak on big stages and, you know, the important people, the special people, then, you know, like, I just wasn't going to be one of those people because I didn't have it all together. You know, I have everyday struggles with discipline and laziness, and I just can't seem to get certain things in order, and it's frustrating. And so if I've got to be perfect, if I've got to just, you know, be a successful person, you know, naturally, you know, I'm just going to give up. And when I was writing the Art of Work, I was doing all these interviews with people, ordinary people who found extraordinary work, you know, who basically found their calling and are doing something extraordinary with their lives, not necessarily rich or famous, but doing amazing things. And I interviewed all these people. And then, you know, I've always been fascinated with biographies, and so I've read, you know, probably 100 biographies, just a ton of biographies in the past several years. And I noticed that in every story of significance, there was not just a single failure, but a season of failure. So, you know, Walt Disney went bankrupt a couple of times. Steve Jobs got kicked out of the company that he started. You know, Benjamin Franklin basically got chased out of his hometown and had to go, you know, go to Philadelphia. And these weren't just like isolated incidents. Some of these seasons of failure lasted up to 10 years. In fact, that seemed to be the average. And so when I interviewed people like my friend Matt McWilliams, who is sort of the story that I talk about in the chapter in The Art of Work, where we talk about failure. He basically spent his 20s going from one job to the next, to the next, to the next, before he really found his calling. And by the way, him drifting from one job to the next wasn't his choice. It was getting fired from this thing and then going and starting this other company and getting fired from that. And yet every step of the way, he was learning something. And looking back on that now, I asked him, I said, you know, like, do you wish you could have gotten this right? Or, you know, if you could go back and succeed again at these failures, you know, would you? And he said, absolutely not. He said, first of all, I couldn't have. Each of those failures taught me something about myself, and they got me to where I am. And so I would like us to reframe failure as not something that is an obstacle that you have to overcome, but rather as I think of it as a pivot point, you know, in basketball.
Yeah.
There's that move where, you know, once you sort of exhausted all your options, you're dribbling down the court, you stop, you plant one foot, you still have freedom of motion to pivot 360 degrees in any direction and pass the ball. And we see this in businesses like Groupon, which, you know, started out as this nonprofit, you know, charitable thing where they're going to use social media to, get people to buy into, hey, let's go give out T-shirts or help this charity on a Saturday afternoon. And nobody responded. And a year into the process, they're $1 million in the hole. And they got to turn this thing around. And they go, well, what if we take this technology that we've built and then try to sell something? What if we try to, you know, get a group discount for, you know, 20 pairs of sneakers or something? And, you know, $13 billion later, it worked out okay. You know, what did Groupon do? Well, first of all, they failed. Second of all, they pivoted. They didn't just kind of sit in their failure, as many of us are prone to do, as I'm prone to do. Instead, they said, what can we learn from this, and how can we intentionally take action? And at least in the case of Groupon, as well as, you know, many other stories that I encountered, including my own story, the failure didn't prevent them from success. It led to their success. And I think we often think that, you know, people who are successful succeed in spite of their failure. I don't think that's true. I think you succeed not in spite of your failure, but because of it.
Wow. Wow, I never knew that backstory until I read the book, and that's amazing. who would have
thought
that? It's
interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You know, you and I both come from nonprofit and ministry backgrounds, and I talk to people in the for-profit sector all the time who think that, like, you know, it would be glamorous or glorious to work for a nonprofit, you know, because it would all be about ideals and, you know, it would be great. And here's a great example where they had the best of intentions to do that, and it didn't work. And I think that just means that there's, you know, lots of room for, you know, different types of work. I mean, you know, we both made a similar pivot, Carrie. I won't completely speak for you, but I'll speak for, you know, myself. I went from nonprofit to a for-profit business. And I can tell you, hands down, without a doubt, that I am helping more people, making a greater impact on people's lives with my business than I ever did in ministry. And I don't, you know, I think that backstory, that context prepared me for what I'm doing now. But, you know, I think it's really encouraging. There's no, you know, one size fits all for, you know, a calling for meaningful work. It's really about what are you made to do and how can you, you know, take that, those skills and those passions and bring them to a world in need and find a way, you know, that's where that you're going to have that intersection between what people need and, you know, what brings you, you know, deep joy and also what you're good at.
That's fascinating. And I 100% agree with you that I think a lot of the seasons of failure, which, by the way, that's fantastic. 10 years was the average. That's encouraging. but I do look back and I don't call that 10-year season of my life a failure, but I do call it a desert.
Yeah.
And, you know, that desert, you look at scripture, I mean, desert is always preparation. It's always preparation. So, Jeff, I know your book has some similarities, I think intentionally, with this whole resistance. And, you know, we have obviously been blessed by a book called, similarly titled, by Stephen Pressfield. Tell us a little bit about how your book is different, similar, maybe an inspiration from it. Is it a follow-up? Give us kind of the overall view there.
Sure. So, you know, Stephen Pressfield's a great author who's kind enough to endorse the book, you know, wrote a book called The War of Art, which is really about writing and creativity and even, you know, kind of entrepreneurship. I mean, there's some great parallels there. And he's obviously taking a spin on, you know, one of the oldest books in the world, the War of Art, or the Art of War. He's the War of Art,
right.
Art of War. Man, a lot of A's and W's to get mixed up. And, I mean, that was just kind of a play on words. I love that book by Pressfield. But really, he talks about attacking creativity, you know, and you know, broadly thinking of that as anything that you want to do that matters in this world with a battle plan. You know, understanding that there's going to be resistance, you're going to run into failure and setbacks. And the art of work is, I would say, you know, takes a slightly different approach, although I agree with everything that Pressfield says. But it's really about thinking of your life as an entire, you know, creative work, and then understanding that there is an intentional path that you can walk. It's not a plan. It's not perfect. It's not, you know, do these five things and you will succeed. It's a path, which means that, you know, you can look on it, look at it, and you can see where people have, you know, walked before. You can follow in their footsteps. It's a wide path, you know, so there's lots of, you know, room for you to kind of get things wrong or go from one side to the left and still kind of be, you know, on the journey. And like any good journey, it's best when it's, you know, experienced with other people. But I didn't call it the science of work, right? I mean, I used some science,
right,
some research in there, but it's an art form, which means that it's going to be different for everybody. We're all have been given these canvases called our lives, and we have a responsibility to put something on those canvases, and, you know, and the art of work will try to help you, you know, make that something beautiful.
Awesome. Love it. Well, Jeff, congrats. I know putting a book together is a big labor of love, and I'm thrilled that you've put together several books that have been fantastic. Some of your other books, The In-Between, Wrecked, what other ones do you have?
And You Are a Writer. Yep, those are
yeah,
all old.
Exactly. And tons of ebooks and courses, one of which I took, which really helped propel me because I kind of fell into writing by accident. And I think your book, your course, Tribe Writers, is really distilling the process, so you don't have to make all kinds of big mistakes that like I did. But tell us, Jeff, what's the next step? I mean, obviously, all these listeners, I encourage them to grab a copy of this book because it's going to help bring clarity. And we know that once we have clarity, we can live lives that are more intentional, more on fire. That's the whole point of this podcast, becoming a soul on fire. So what can we do? What's kind of the next step? How can we find out more information?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, you mentioned clarity, and there's this quote that I repeat throughout the book because it just seems to be true in all the stories that I encountered in my own story. And it's kind of become a mantra for me, which is that clarity comes with action. There's this great story about somebody going to Mother Teresa, asking her to pray for him for clarity so that he knows what to do with his life. And Mother Teresa refuses. She goes, I'm not going to pray for clarity for you. And he goes, why not? You're Mother Teresa. You've got clarity. Why can't you share some of it with the rest of us? And she goes, oh, no, I've never had clarity. I've only ever had trust. And I love that. I think that really speaks to the essence of faith. It's not about knowing and, you know, taking a sure step. It's about not knowing but trusting the process, you know, and trusting the author of that process, which, you know, I happen to believe is God. And I think that we all have a calling. We all have something important that we are meant to do with our lives. And maybe that's going to affect five people or 500,000. I don't know, but I know that you were put on this earth to do something, to be a part of something that's you know, about more than you. But the next step is to do just that. It's to take the next step. It's to act, not wait for clarity and then act, but act and trust that clarity comes with action. One of the things that we're doing with this book, because I feel like in many ways it's the most important thing that I've written. It's the culmination of everything that I've done up to this point. And I really believe it's going to be a book that's going to help a lot of people, not just because it's my own experience, because it's so many stories of people in different phases of life, from, you know, people starting out in their 20s to, you know, it kind of ends with this, you know, on the subject of legacy, where I interview, I think, one of the most influential people I've ever known, that most people, you know, probably don't know his name, Ed Caffey. You know, this man who's pushing 80 and has this incredible legacy because he found his calling and he lived his life well. Anyway, we are we're doing this special promotion for the book for just, you know, people that I'm connected with, like you, Carrie, offering it, you know, to anybody who's interested in this, where in between now and the launch of the book, I've worked out a special deal with the publisher where basically if you're willing to pay $6.99 flat shipping and handling, ship really anywhere, you get the paperback book and $250 of bonuses for free. So this is a limited time thing that we're doing in between now and March 23rd. The book comes out on March 24th, and this offer goes away. We are shipping as many, you know, books as we can. So we're taking orders for that now. And if you pay $6.99, you get the book for free. And that just covers the shipping and handling. And there's just a ton of bonuses where people can get more about that. So if you're interested in that, if, you know, this has kind of resonated with you, Carrie's got a special link for you for that, just for listeners of the show to get those bonuses and get the free book. And that's at artofworkbook.com/ignite.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I mean, look, I'm a writer. I put out books. For you to make that offer to get the book for less than retail, essentially free, and just covering shipping, I mean, that is fantastic. That's something that I did with my last book because, again, we're writers. We put our heart, blood, sweat, and tears into this. And when people can, you know, when we can remove the barrier, if people say, well, gee, you know, I can't afford that or something, or, you know, I don't know if I want to risk that. I mean, when you can remove the barrier like you just did and then provide some additional things, I mean, that is fantastic. So first of all, thank you, Jeff, for doing that. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on this podcast. Number one, you fit with our vision and mission to ignite souls. And number two, you're one who's putting out quality content. So thanks a lot, man, and we are fully and truly excited. When is the official release date?
March 24th. So if you order March the book 24th. Between now and then through that link, artofworkbook.com/ignite, you know, you're going to get that. You know, and you can get it in bookstores, you know, after that. But this is, this is you know, an early promotion. And honestly, you know, I'm doing this. I'm not making, you know, any money off of this. I'm doing this because I want to get the book into as many people's hands as possible. I want to remove that barrier, as you mentioned, Carrie. And honestly, I'm hoping that if it resonates, people will talk about it and, you know, you'll share the book with a friend or, you know, buy one for your, you know, kid or parent or neighbor or whatever. But yeah, I really believe in this message and I'm doing everything I can to get it out to as many people as possible.
Fantastic. Well, Jeff, it's always a blast to connect with you. I know we sometimes see each other at different conferences, and, you know,
yeah.
it's always great to chat. And, hey, man, thanks so much. Blessings to you, and we'll continue to follow you, all right?
Totally my pleasure. Thank you, Carrie, and thanks for all the work that you do and, you know, the lives that you're impacting. I'm one of them.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that wonderful interview with Mr. Jeff Goins. Remember, if you like this podcast, if you enjoyed it, and you want regular content to keep you ignited, go to Igniting Souls on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe. If you want to leave a review, that's helpful too. It helps us get the message out. And you definitely want to check out escapingshawshank.com. Oh my, we have some amazing things coming. Some big secret stuff that's going to be revealed here in a moment. Some stuff with Dan and Joanne Miller. You might know of them. But we have a crazy event coming up here. Nobody knows about it. But if you go to escapingshawshank.com, you can take a peek. And in the upcoming months, you'll learn even more. Just a peek right now. Little cool video. That's about it. All right, take care, and we'll talk very soon.